criminal offenders. The sentencing took place after 2 days in court presided over by Justice Michael Tamman. During the hearing, the Crown Prosecution cited sentencing precedents from injunction breach cases in Canada, which had resulted in a sentence of jail time of up to 90 days. After 2 days, however, the sentence was ordered. On July 3rd, Chief Sahail was ordered to serve 60 days in community with no community service. As Judge Michael Tamman was reading his sentence, tensions were high in the courtroom. People like Anna thought that the sentence was going to be jail time, and I spoke to a number of people outside of the court just after the final sentence of 60 days arrest to be served at home was given.
At first, I was quite scared because for a second there, it kind of sounded like there could have been some jail time. But then sitting there and listening to him saying that he would be on her house arrest was very thankful. I mean, for him to be criminally charged and for looking after our own land, territory, our own Ginta, like, that's just, that baffles me, and I think it's wrong, and Adam's my hero, you know? I love him so much, and Chief Sahail, you know, he's definitely a hero in my eyes. I hope that it does set good precedents on future cases that are coming up, and I am pleased to say that I was very happy to hear the judge himself say unceded territory. So that's going to go on record. That's going to be there forever, him saying unceded territory. So it's a small win for us, but it's a big win.
Molly Wickham, a Wet'suwet'en land defender who will also be served a sentence in the BC Supreme Court, shared her feelings on the sentencing as well.
I feel relieved that Chief Sahail is not going to spend any time in a correctional facility. I think that that was the right choice. It was relieving to hear that the land dispute was a factor in sentencing. It's frustrating that we've had to spend so much time in court and in trial, and the fact that he still had a guilty conviction. So, I feel a bit conflicted, relieved that it's over and that that he's not going to jail. He should absolutely should never have to go to jail for upholding Wet'suwet'en law. And frustrated at the fact that we're here in the first place.
Hey, my name is Janet Williams. I'm known as Auntie Janet throughout the world. I'm here to support Sahail, my father clan. This morning the defense was talking about what he's been doing and on our territory and that he hasn't have any records on him or anything like that. He's been doing an awful lot for the territory. The defense lawyer spoke on that all morning. And by the way it sounds, by 2 o'clock they're going to have the judge do the sentencing. But I'm hoping for house arrest, which I heard they were speaking about. So let's just hope that goes that way, because he's an elder himself, you know, and he's got issues, medical issues, so he can't be spending time in jail at all. So, yeah, I'm here to support him, and there's many of us here that's supporting him from quite a distance. So I'm really hoping that it works well in his favor.
Can you tell me a little bit who Chief Sahail is to you and who he is to the community as well?
He has a big name, Chief Sahail. He's had that for years. He's one of the chiefs for the Lek'Tamisiu clan. One of the 4 high chiefs, and how he's my father clan is because my dad was from that clan, so that's how we are related.
And now here's Chief Sahail himself.
Okay, so how do you feel?
Well, I'm really confident there that the Tamman's predicted there that it was going to go into appeal very early in trial, and set basically the whole stage was set for that, and our lawyers are going to be filing the appeal within the next day or two, And I'm really confident there, like, this is going to probably end up going all the way to possibly the Supreme Court of Canada even.
Yeah.
You know, because it's basically an extension of Delgamuukw, you know, which we kind of been waiting for a long time to get clarification there on our laws, you know, on our lands.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's really important. I'm really pleased with how, you know, everything turned out. Even though, you know, we didn't win the original, but I think in the long run, it's going to be even more positive.
Hearing Judge Tamman use the term unceded territory, unceded land, how did that feel to hear that being echoed back to you?
That is something there that a year ago you would never have heard by any court, you know, because he was kind of reluctant to use some of the terms of that nature right at the beginning. And he was he corrected counsel when they were using, you know, the colonial law. And then within 3 days, he was making reference to colonial law, you know, so, you know, he wanted it to be all Canadian law, you know, like unilaterally. But she said, no, it's colonial law because it's colonial influence and colonial, you know, so my lawyer was really, really clear about that. You know, so.
Yeah.
On the appeal, have your lawyers told you anything about how that works in terms of you serving the sentence that was just handed down here right now?
Like, is that well, they said, you know, unfortunately, they said if it was a jail sentence, it would be more serious. But because of it's being a community sentence there, they said that, I will never get that back.
You know, but so you start serving that sentence regardless of happens with the appeal?
That's right.
That's interesting that you would serve a sentence that could be turned back again.
No, that's right. Well, that's a good question for me to ask my lawyer.
And thank you for that report from Pamela Hansen of our friends at CICK Radio in Smithers, BC, about a story that's been a big issue, the wetsuit and pipeline blockades for many years. Now we're seeing the legal ramifications come to play. We will be right back with Hannah Fraser of the Simon Fraser University student newspaper, The Peak, to tell us about the big stories this week, right after this.
This is Bird Note. Some of us like to talk with our hands. At one time, scientists thought only primates used their limbs to gesture and signal to other individuals. More recently, we've learned a number of animals can point to something to communicate with another member of their species. But one gesture was thought unique to humans. You might use it when you reach a door at the same time as someone else. After you. No, after you. Researchers studying birds called Japanese tits, relatives of the chickadees and titmice in North America, noticed that mates raising chicks together often fluttered their wings near the entrance of their nest box. Knowing these birds have complex ways of communicating through sound, the researchers began carefully observing them to see what the wing fluttering might mean. After recording hundreds of examples of wing fluttering, the pattern became clear. The first bird to wing flutter would politely wait at the nest entrance while the other one entered. So the wing flutter was a signal, much like that arm-sweeping gesture that people use to mean, after you. Following this discovery, scientists are paying even closer attention to what birds might be saying with their wings. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. And joining me in the studio here is Hannah Fraser from Simon Fraser University's student newspaper, The Peak. Welcome, Hannah.
Thanks so much. It's lovely to be here.
You're one of the staff writers at The Peak?
One of the news writers.
News writers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And we're going to be starting a new regular segment here on Monday Speak Up. Hannah's going to be joining us to tell us about some of the stories in the peak. And, of course, because this is the modern world of the Internet, even if you're not up here on the campus, you can check these stories out online. And, in fact, I believe this summer, the peak is all online. Usually you're both online and you have print copies distributed around the SFU campuses, but right now for the summer you're online.
Yes, that's correct.
Great. So before we get into the stories, how do people find the peak's website?
Well, we're online at the-peak.ca. So you can find all our stories there. We upload our stories every week on Monday. So we have a full PDF issue on our website called ISSUU. So that's issue. And then also uploaded onto our website.
Great. And what are some of your stories this week that you're proud of?
Yes. So our first one I'm going to talk about is our cover piece. Our cover title is Protect Our Parks. Mm-hmm. This first one's by Kaya Antic. She's a staff writer. It's an opinions piece called The Vancouver Park Board Must Stay Independent. This one deals with Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim's decision last December to amend the Vancouver Charter so that the Independent Park Board would be dissolved and put under municipal control. Antic says that this meant transitioning environmental control from an organization that protected it to a council seeking profits over, like, ecological value. Mm-hmm. So she explains why this decision has pretty terrible implications for our city's green spaces and those who appreciate them throughout her piece.
Great. Well, that's definitely been an issue that's been in the news ever since it was a big election issue in mm-hmm. last year's Vancouver municipal election.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, interesting point of view. Mm-hmm. You're also in this week's issue doing a story about Crab Park. We followed the story down of the encampment at Crab Park quite a bit here on this program.
I see.
You have some new stuff going on there.
Yes, that's right.
And this is your story.
Yes, this is my story in the news section. I did write about this about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I followed up with the same person, the same advocate that I mm-hmm. interviewed a month ago, named Fiona York, a pretty well-known advocate, I think, for the Crab Park residents. And I talk about the people who really rely on these parks for shelter, the residents, kind of in the same theme as our overall issue being mm-hmm. protect our parks. And I'm talking about how there's this new daily exclusive work zone that's mm-hmm. been established there, and it's preventing advocates and volunteers from actually entering. And so there's these street sweeps that's been going on for quite a while now, and it's been pretty terrible for the residents there because they're they're saying they're cleaning up the area, the park rangers, and they're really just throwing out all the belongings of the residents there, and they don't have the opportunity to retrieve any of those belongings. York told me that one of the most horrific things she witnessed there was the rangers seizing a memorial wreath for one of the residents who had recently passed. But now that the work zone is there, there's no mm-hmm. real opportunity for the volunteers or the advocates to be able to intervene in incidents like this. So I've been following that story recently.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I've talked to Fiona and some other folks mm-hmm. Associated with the camp there. And of course, you know, a few years ago, it must be maybe it's 3 years ago, 2 years ago at least, mm-hmm. you know, when they won a court injunction that kind of made them legally recognized, they had it created a bit of a safe space for them down there.
Right.
But as your reporting is showing, and we've heard elsewhere, you know, the mm-hmm. the park board in particular has been in really getting much more aggressive in...
Definitely.
In, I guess you could say, policing them, mm-hmm. which is just... But also kind of harassing them with these kind of... these sort of cleanups and removing of items and stuff, which is also... You know, a big issue elsewhere where the homeless are trying to find a place to park themselves.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the designated area there at Crab Park only really fits like 14 residents. That's not many people. Mm-hmm. And the park board has been spending so much money into the street sweeps. I think the figure was let's see. Yeah, more than $1 million just on the street sweeps. And York told me that they could have used that money to build about like 10 tiny homes by now.
Yep.
But this quote she gave me was really wonderful. She said that they just don't want that visibility of homelessness, the visible poverty, and they're wanting to sweep that away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was down at Crab Park talking to a resident in December, and at that time there were 45 residents, so it's pretty, it shows you the effect it has that now they're down to 14.
Yeah.
You know, that all this attention they get, which in many ways amounts to a kind of harassment, really has a dramatic effect on the people there.
Definitely.
Very interesting. And your what's your third story?
So this is a features piece. It's called SFU, SF as in S-F-Y-O-U. It's called SFU, Ashley Jones's Art Signifies Connection and Understanding. It's a features piece by another staff writer named Haley Miller. SFU is like a recurring type of features piece we do at the Peak, kind of showcasing like particular success stories or people that have had notable impacts that are from SFU. And this one's about Ashley Jones, a student here, an undergraduate student in SFU's Indigenous Studies program, talking about her oil paintings, or her organ paintings, sorry, that represents science and community. And yeah, it doesn't really relate to the overall parks theme that I was talking about before, but it's still a great piece. Yeah, it's just talking about Jones coming to understand her culture more through her art and her studies.
That's awesome. It's great to highlight the SFU artists and other folks with that feature, you know, who are doing great things on the campus.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for bringing us those stories, Hannah.
Of course.
Once more, how do people find these stories online or on social media?
So we're online at the-peak.ca, and we also have our online issue uploaded every week to the website ISSUU.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today, and you'll be back next week.
Yes, thank you so
Excellent.
Much.
Thank you. Hannah Fraser from SFU's Peak newspaper.
We had food growing up, and we were used to being able to eat, but then all of a sudden, we needed that help. That's why the food bank is here. They're here to help you, and they're here to help you.
The food bank is for anyone who needs one. Visit the food bank near you to help and be helped.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Forest fires can race through dry vegetation and trees, leaving behind a desolate landscape.
Everything around you is burnt to a crisp, and the forests are really silent. All the animals are gone, all the birds are gone.
Emily Fairfax is a geographer at the University of Minnesota who studies how beavers, yes, beavers, can help reduce the damage caused by wildfires. By building dams and digging channels, beavers create wetlands that support moist vegetation. This water can prevent the land from drying out during a drought and stifle any wildfires that try to burn through.
The beaver wetland comes into view, and it's a completely different situation. It's suddenly very loud. You hear birds calling, you hear amphibians calling, you hear the fish jumping and the water splashing, you hear the beavers grumbling and chatting with one another, and everything's green and everything's lush.
Fairfax says beaver populations have been decimated across much of North America. But some wildlife officials in states like California are now reintroducing beavers to make the land more resilient, especially as climate change raises the risk of extreme fires.
If we can work with natural processes and animals like beavers, we have a lot better shot of actually protecting these landscapes we care about.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
All right, thanks to Hannah Fraser and The Peak for coming and telling us about what's going on in the newspaper this week. You had something you wanted to add.
Well, one thing about the court case about...
Well, it was the court case with Wetsuit and Chief Sahel being sentenced to 60 days community arrest for his actions as blocking the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Well, 2 years ago, it was sort of an anarchist fair I went to, and they had a variety of events. And one thing was about, it was an Aboriginal woman, a few other people that were persecuted because I think it was even here up in SFU they were doing for the pipeline, and they had a court trial for that. And she said that they were not allowed to bring up the concept of the actual unceded territory.
Mm-hmm.
That was not allowed to be brought up, and it was a woman judge. That just said, no, you cannot bring that up in this courtroom. Now, what was interesting, what I heard there was that they were able to bring it up,
mm-hmm.
which is, I guess it's progressing. But at that, I decisively heard at one time for the other trial, I don't think she went to jail or anything, but it was... It was you were not allowed to bring it up. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that'll get.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It sort of feels like a bit of a significant precedent, which could conceivably have a quite an effect on future similar cases where First Nations or traditional First Nations leadership is taking action to protect those lands.
Right. So
you know,
no, I about Oliver North. I just got it now. What happened to him?
Yeah,
he. They gave him a 3 years suspended prison term, 2 years probation, and a fine of $150,000. Only they have the conviction later vacated.
Hmm.
So that's what happened to him. He basically didn't have anything happen to him. I mean, in Wikipedia they have a picture of him being a mugshot that happened in 1988 or something, mm-hmm. but I guess he had bail or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, you know, one thing I found out accidentally about Woodrow Wilson,
mm-hmm.
is that in 1913 he segregated the civil service,
mm-hmm.
which meant, you know, black people could not really hold civil service jobs.
Yeah.
And it was actually Harry Truman who had it overturned in 1948. And in fact, what he did was after the American Civil War, or I guess maybe even before, it was Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
It was there was no segregation, and he created in 1932 a segregation of the military forces and of civil service that made it hard, I mean, almost impossible for blacks to be in the civil service, have a government job.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, Franklin Roosevelt did not overturn it in his administration. Harry Truman did in 1948.
Yeah. And they didn't overturn it even under the pressure of the Second World War. And for the most part, black soldiers and servicemen weren't allowed to serve in any combat roles. You know, they were in segregated units that mostly would be in support roles, you know, like doing construction work and things like that, all very important to...
Well, that sounds like they got a better deal because it wants to be in combat. One thing I do know that but the director, Frank Capra,
mm-hmm.
did a lot of those Mr. Smith goes to Washington,
yeah.
Mr. Deeds goes to town. In World War II, he made these, I don't know, I think he was... hired by the United States government to make these films, these propagandist mm-hmm. film.
Yeah.
One is the Negro Soldier, which I've seen. It runs about 40 minutes. So it's interesting. I've seen that. And then they, you know, it was sort of propagandist to say this was the right way to do things or something. I don't know. So it's the other thing about Woodrow Wilson, I mean, I kind of found out by accident about half a week ago. But it's funny that he's sort of sometimes touted as being like this progressive liberal. Well, they bring up the League of Nations and how that failed. But He's seen the Via racist. I had heard about Birth of a Nation. He enjoyed Birth of a Nation, mm-hmm. which came out in 1915. Now, that happened in 1913 with mm-hmm. desegregation.
Yeah.
But I thought it was sort of just like, when I heard, it's like it's history written with a lightning, he said, about Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
But I had always thought, well, maybe it's just... Actually, it's hard not to see this as being a racist film, but mm-hmm. it was so racist, it was really, at the time, it was criticized. I mean, people say, well, for its time, it was accepted. Well, more so maybe now, but it still was not good even then. But, yeah. So it's funny that the book Nun Dare Call It Conspiracy, they don't bring up the that he segregated the civil service and all this. They kind of don't like other aspects about him.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, I'm going to bring up World War One.
Yep.
About why the United States entered it. Now, this is said Nun Dare Call It Conspiracy, like he kind of lied. He said, oh, he ran in 1916. I'm going to keep people free from being in the war. But what happened was that there was this, after he got elected again, the Germans, they intercepted this telegram sent by the German government to the Mexicans saying if they want to invade the United States, the Germans would help them. Right. Or something like this. And that kind of went over the top. I mean, there could Winston Churchill felt that the United States should never have entered World War One, or the Great War, as it was called at the time. Well, I usually don't agree with Winston Churchill, but maybe I'll agree with this one. So I don't know. I guess the only progressive thing was that suppose you wanted the League of Nations. It doesn't sound progressive
at all. Yeah,
he used
the 13 points and the principles of the post-war settlement and the League of Nations, which was what he was, aside from being president, you know, his international role. But, you know, I guess his dubious racial policies were sort of conveniently forgotten for a long time. We're just about out of time here.
Well, that's okay, yeah.
All right. thanks for bringing that up, Peter. And thanks for Hannah for being here earlier in the program. She'll be back next week to tell us more about what's going on the peak. Gardening with Embark will return next week as well. We don't have an episode for you this week on the show, though it will probably be airing on Thursday this week. And Peter and I will be back next week in this time slot.
Maybe I'll do the Robert Kennedy Jr. book. I wanted to do it kind of justice both sides about the issue. The real Anthony Fauci has sort of had the argument why there was a real trouble with the COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a website or a YouTube channel, Debunk the Funk. Now, right. This person has criticized the book, and he's also a big believer in the vaccine.
Yeah.
And so, but I want to get a bit more information.
Great. Well, we'll
for next week.
Talk about that next week. Thanks for watching the show or listening to the show today. We're going to head you out with a track from Stephen Hamm, Theremin Man, called Planet Earth. Stephen Hamm has been a big part of the Vancouver music scene for 30 years or longer, playing in Vancouver bands such as The Slow or The Evaporators and many, many more. This is his solo project as the Theremin Man, and this track is Planet Earth.